There's a partisan primary election coming up on August 13th, and for the first time in Wisconsin history, there will be two constitutional amendments on that ballot. Up until now, any constitutional amendments have been voted on in spring and fall general elections, when turnout is higher. And these amendments could have a big impact on how the governor is able to allocate funds. The amendments propose changes to how the governor is able to designate federal aid money during things like a pandemic or major weather event. To help understand what the amendments are and what a yes or no vote means, Lake Effect's Jimmy Gutierrez is joined by political science professor Phil Rocco.
There are these two amendments coming up. And before we get into kind of what they are and what they set out to do and what even an amendment is, are we seeing more of these or is this just my imagination?
Yeah. So since 1854, voters in Wisconsin have voted on over 200 constitutional amendments. And the way that that works is the state legislature will vote on a piece of legislation. They have to do it in two consecutive sessions. And then if they approve it in both sessions, they will put it before voters. So this is coming from the legislature. And what we've seen in the last few years is a sort of increase in the number of those amendments. We're going to see three of them in the remainder of the year, two on the August ballot, one on the November ballot. And I think you could interpret at least some of these amendments as reflecting the state legislature's sort of understanding that the sort of political map is going to change. You know, we're going to be voting in new districts. There's going to be a little bit more competition. And I think that you can see Republicans in the state legislature trying to entrench some of their policy preferences through kind of putting them before voters and trying to get them put on the books as a constitutional amendment, which is much harder to undo than simply repealing a law.
If we can dig in,
sure.
What are we being asked in this first question, the delegation of appropriation power? Because this is very opaque language for people to try to make sense of.
Yeah. So we've got two constitutional amendment questions on the ballot, but you should really read them together. So the first one asks if we should add an amendment to the Constitution that prevents the legislature from delegating its power to appropriate money to the executive branch, for example. And then the second question is whether or not the Constitution should be amended to specifically prohibit the governor from allocating any money that the state of Wisconsin gets from the federal government unless the Wisconsin legislature specifically approves it. So let me try to break that down. This is really an set of amendments that's about the money that Wisconsin gets from the federal government. So aid from Washington accounts for about a third of our state budget. And there's a significant chunk of that money that when it comes in, the governor gets to decide what to do with it. And think about all of the money the federal government gave Wisconsin during COVID or during the Great Recession. That's unanticipated money. And so when it comes in, the governor gets to decide how to allocate it. And you can understand, like in an emergency context, this power goes all the way back to the Great Depression. This sort of authority was given to Wisconsin governors back in 1931. It's the midst of the Great Depression. And the idea is when there's an economic emergency, when there's a natural disaster, the important thing is for the aid to be able to get out to people who need it across the state quickly. And if you think about the legislative process, if it requires going through two chambers of the state legislature or being approved by the legislature's Joint Finance Committee, this is something that we know based on how it works in other contexts in Wisconsin, that can take a really long time for the money to get out there. And so what are we talking about? What is this money? What does it do? During the pandemic, the state of Wisconsin was sort of one of the leaders in forwarding aid to small businesses. If you look across 50 states, Wisconsin sort of ranks like number one in terms of the money it allocated to small businesses. I think it over 110,000 small businesses got aid from the state of Wisconsin during the pandemic. And it went out, if you compare Wisconsin to other states, it went out relatively quickly, whereas other states, it took a very long time. And there are other states that still have spent a very small percentage of the money that they got from the federal government during the pandemic. And I think you can look at the Wisconsin governor having that authority as one reason why. And so what these amendments would do is make it impossible for that money to get out as quickly as it did during COVID, because they would require that the state legislature steps in and gives explicit approval before the governor decides how to allocate that aid.
Okay, so it makes sense why we're seeing these as a package then. They're very complementary, it sounds like. Is that the reason behind why we're seeing them now on Wisconsin ballots?
Yeah, so if you look at the origins of these amendments, I think anytime there's been a big economic emergency during the Great Recession and during COVID-19, there's always been rumbling in the legislature about the legislature's need to have more control over that funding. Now, back during the Great Recession, that was somewhat easier to negotiate because you had one party in control of both the legislature and the governor's mansion. And so there was a sort of power sharing agreement and that money getting out the door. Now, this specific set of amendments came about during COVID-19 when the legislature was controlled by Republicans and the governor was a Democrat. And initially, the Wisconsin state legislature, when the ARPA, which is the big federal relief package aid, came into the state, they initially tried to pass a piece of legislation which restricted the governor from using the money unless he got approval for the allocations from this very unique committee called the Joint Finance Committee, which is a committee within the state legislature. It's dominated by Republicans. Evers vetoed that legislation. Now, had that legislation, you know, had he not vetoed it, it would have basically allowed the state legislature to put a block on the allocation of that aid until they were sort of approved of it. And we can see this because in other parts of the legislative process, that's exactly what the Joint Finance Committee does, is unless they approve it, state agencies can't spend the money. And this has held up spending of a variety of types for many months and sometimes years.
It's interesting because this back and forth between the governor, executive powers, and the legislature seems like it's been going on for a while in Wisconsin. What's the bigger political context here?
Well, I think there's two contexts I would talk about. So first, the most immediate one is in 2018, when Tony Evers was elected, that set off a new series of conflicts between the legislature and the governor. The governor had been a Republican, right, since 2011, and the legislature had been controlled by Republicans for a number of those years. And so easy enough for the legislature to delegate a lot of power to the executive branch. When the governor becomes a Democrat, even before he's inaugurated, the legislature passes a series of what are known as lame duck laws, which restrict the power of the executive branch, limits the ability of the executive branch to do certain things like sign on to Medicaid expansion or get involved in certain kinds of lawsuits without the legislature's explicit approval. And that's really the context we've been seeing during Evers' time as governor, is this increasing tete-a-tete between both branches of government. And often those conflicts sort of wind up before the Wisconsin Supreme Court. There's a deeper political context, too, that goes beyond Wisconsin, which is since the 1970s, conservative policy activists around the country, primarily an organization called the American Legislative Exchange Council, or ALEC, has been promoting legislation that would make it more difficult for state executive branches to allocate money that the federal government sends them without explicit approval of the state legislature. So we can see the origins of legislation of one kind or another like that way back in as early as 1978. And a number of states ended up adopting legislation that looks like that. But there is a bigger ideological conflict there about the ability of states to spend federal money. And I think you can see the roots of it in legislation like organizations like ALEC have promoted.
So there's a lot of history behind these amendments and kind of this route being taken in this, it feels like, almost battle between the legislature and governor or executive powers. What do amendments actually set out to do in the first place?
At a very basic level, these amendments set out to enlarge the power of the legislature at the expense of the executive branch. And you can see them as being part of this bigger, really partisan battle between a legislature that has tended to be controlled by Republicans and a state executive branch elected through statewide elections, which have tended in the Democratic direction over the last 6 years or so. And I think if you look at the votes approving the text of these amendments in the legislature, they're straight party line votes in both sessions that approved it. And so you can read them as part of that bigger conflict between a legislature predominantly controlled by Republicans trying to enhance or expand its scope of authority over a executive branch that has been tending in the Democratic column.
Not to take all the fun out of voting, but how do you expect these amendments to do on the ballot, considering it's a special vote in mid-August? Do you have any sense of that?
Yeah. An important thing about these amendments is this is the first time in Wisconsin history that voters have ever been asked to approve constitutional amendments during a primary election in August, which tends to be low turnout. Historically, every single other time that the state has voted on constitutional amendments, it's happened during a spring general election or a fall general election. Now, spring general elections do tend to be lower turnout too, but fall general elections, right now the trend is the turnout is about double what we would expect to see in August. So in August 2022, we saw, I think, a 27% turnout among voting eligible population in the state. That was a 40-year high. And there's some reasons for that, right? There is a very high-profile U.S. Senate election on the ballot in August in 2022. Right now, we're looking at congressional elections around the state, congressional primaries, but of Wisconsin's eight congressional districts, there are competitive Republican primaries in three of those districts, competitive Democratic primaries in two. So less turnout there. There's no competitive U.S. Senate primary in either column. And less than half of the state assembly seats are going to see competitive primaries. So it is likely going to be a very low turnout. And the one thing we know from the past is that Wisconsin voters tend to approve state constitutional amendments. One potential reason why is that, unlike other states, Wisconsin does not require plain language to be provided to voters about exactly what those amendments would do, who supports them, who opposes them, what are the arguments for and against. Wisconsin voters basically have to get that from media, from other organizations. The state doesn't provide it. When voters don't necessarily know what they're voting on, there can be a sort of anchoring bias towards a yes. There are, of course, exceptions to this. I would point to back in April of 2018, there was an effort to try to eliminate the state treasurer's office. There was a very strong no campaign on that measure, and voters defeated it in the April 2018 elections. So it's not inconceivable that voters would vote this down, but a lot depends on how the issue is framed, whether or not voters are getting information about it. And of course, I think the fact that we're going to see a lower turnout in the August primaries probably puts a damper on the sort of no campaign effort as well.
So a lot of this sounds like it's just on, you know, the public to figure things out for themselves, whether it's going through media or trusted channels. Who do we know that's taken stances either to back or oppose these amendments?
Yeah, so supporters of these amendments include several Republican state senators, Dale Kuyenga, Howard Markline, both Republican state senators in Wisconsin. There was also, during the legislative process, the state's main business lobby, the Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, supported it. Where opponents are concerned, there's sort of a coalition of organizations that includes the Wisconsin Education Association Council, which is the state's largest teachers union, the League of Women Voters, organizations representing local departments and boards of public health, conservation voters organizations in the state, the Wisconsin Public Health Association, the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. So there's sort of an organizational coalition behind the no campaign in both of these.
Phil, thanks so much for coming in and talking with us. Just a final question. Are there any other potential consequences with these amendments?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are two ways of looking at the consequences of these amendments. The first is the kind of practical policy consequences. So when the state receives emergency aid, when there's a natural disaster, when there's an economic crisis, or like during COVID, when there's both a pandemic and an economic crisis, the question is, who is going to be able to decide how that money is spent? And right now, the governor's office is able to make that decision, speed the money where it's needed, and you don't have to go through the typical legislative conflict that we see in a lot of other issues. Legislative leaders who are right now during this moment in time of a different party than the governor they don't necessarily support that arrangement, and you know, they want to give themselves the ability to intervene. That's what would happen if this passed. The second set of consequences related to that, which is this is a bigger political conflict between two different institutions that have been locked in battle with one another over a variety of things. So while the text of the amendments might seem to be obscure or even vague or ambiguous, it really relates to this much bigger battle for control of Wisconsin's political institutions, which I think is much more familiar to voters.
Phil Rocco is an associate professor of political science at Marquette University. He spoke with Lake Effect's Jimmy Gutierrez.